Everyone, I would like to welcome you back to the Original Dal. I'm your host, James Rodriguez, on the Original Dal. I unpackage music with the people who create it. And at the same time, we give back to charity. For every question a guest answers, we get items donated to those in need. For more information, join theoriginaldal.com. And as with every and all things with the Original Dal, any audio recording, ripping, stealing is strictly prohibited in every country in the world. So if you see anything leaked, please report it. Big shout out to my Patreon supporters. You all rock. Today, we are welcoming back recording artist, producer, songwriter, vibe maker, awesome human being, friend of mine, Curtis Richa. Curtis, thank you so much for joining us again today.
Thank you, James, for having me again. You know, I enjoyed myself thoroughly last time with you. You're like the best music historian that I know.
It was a lot of fun. And what was great is that we were able to talk about how music came to you and things like that, and talk about a handful of your songs. But there's so many other songs in your discography, your iconography, that you've worked with so many people. So today, I kind of wanted to call this, you know, interview with you, the British Invasion. We're going to be talking about British artists and Britney Spears.
Yes.
Rewinding back to January of 2004, new artist in the UK, Joss Stone, would release a cover of The White Stripes' hit song, Fell in Love with a Girl. Joss's take on the song would be updated to fit the young 17-year-old soul singer. Her version would be called Fell in Love with a Boy. The debut album from Joss Stone would be called The Soul Sessions, which was released months before her debut single. The album was filled with cover versions of iconic soul songs. During production of the album, Joss would be working with of many people, one being the late R&B and soul singer and songwriter Betty Wright, who was a well-known artist in the soul genre. Now, Betty Wright was basically a child prodigy. Her vocal skills surpassed those that were two times her age. Betty Wright's debut album, My First Time Around, was released back in 1968. Betty Wright was just 14 years old when the album was being recorded. So Joss would benefit not only from having a soul icon with her, but also a woman who started out in the business so young. The Soul Sessions would go on to become critically acclaimed. It would sell over 5 million copies worldwide. Joss Stone would earn Brit Awards in the categories Best Urban Act, Best Female Solo Artist, and Breakthrough Act of the Year in 2005. Later on in her career, Joss would also become a Grammy winner. Now we know a little bit about Joss Stone, let's continue our chat with Curtis Richa about his work with Joss Stone and, interestingly enough, when he first started working with the young soul singer. Let's kind of rewind back. I want to take it as almost a track by track. Back in 2004, British singer Joss Stone released her sophomore album called Mind, Body, and Soul. And everyone, you can't see this, but I'm putting up the CD that I have with it. There you go. Well played CD. It was number one in the UK album charts, number one in the UK R&B album charts, three times platinum in the UK and platinum in the US. Now, a song on that album was written by today's guest, Curtis. The song, Don't Know How. So Curtis, let's go back. Let's unpackage this. Okay. How did you get involved in this Joss Stone project? And had you heard of Joss Stone before that? Because we here in America, a lot of these British artists are huge in the UK and might have some kind of appearances here and there. But let's talk about that. How did you get involved in Joss Stone, and how much did you know about her prior to this song being recorded?
Okay. So I'm going to take you back 2 years prior to 2004, 2002. And this is even before I did the J-Lo record. I went to a writing camp called the Creative Collective in Toronto. And it was run by Justin Gray, who's a major producer in America now, and his brother, Brandon Gray, who's no longer with us, one of my best friends, Brandon Gray. And they put together this writing camp. And so I went to the writing camp and flew in. And then we did like different sessions with different songwriters. And one of the sessions was with a producer named Daniel Pierre, who, and also another producer songwriter named Jeremy Rosumna, who wrote "I Try" for Macy Gray.
That's such a good song.
So
Such a
yeah,
good song.
so Jeremy was good on the roads. He's great with keys. He just had this funky style, you know. So was Daniel. Daniel Pierre was he was great with guitar and keys and drums and everything. So we got into a session with him, and you know, Justin's great. Justin plays everything. So we were there and we were thinking, what could we do? And I think someone said we should do a song for Brandy. And but we wanted something that was kind of like funky, like sitting up in my room, but not really
Oh yeah.
that. So we wrote this song. Now we wrote this song, but we said, gosh, we need someone to sing it. Her name was Rebecca Valdez, incredible singer. She toured with Janet for a while. She was one of her
Love
backup.
it.
Rebecca is an amazing singer-songwriter, just incredible. She agreed to demo for us. So we demoed the song, Don't Know How. We wrote it. So Daniel Pierre was subsequently, after he left the camp, went to work with Steve Greenberg. And Steve Greenberg had an artist named Josh Stone. At the time, she was, I want to say she was 12 at that time, 12, 13. So they were recording with her. And at that time, the thought was to do a covers project first because they wanted to kind of introduce her through covers. But in that process, they were listening to songs and Daniel played Don't Know How. He figured, okay, this song could work for her. They picked the song. So they notified us, I think a few months after we did the camp, that Josh wanted the song. Now, mind you, that was the end of 2002. Right. So there was so much time that went by. Like we were like, okay, 2003, the album, you know, her covers project comes out, it does extremely well.
The soul sessions.
Then, right, the Soul Sessions. And then after that, there was mention of her debut album, which is going to be Originals. And we're like, gosh, you know, she had like, you know, Lamont Dozier, she had all these, Betty Wright, all these incredibly legendary songwriter producers were involved with it. And I'm thinking, gosh, I hope that we're on this project. Like I was just really praying, gosh, please, God, please. So then we got an email a few months before saying that Josh had cut the record and that it would be included on her album. So you know how I was super excited. Like, because you know, at this point, I had a number one record already, you know, with but I wanted to work in the international market really bad. And this was like my first foray into it. So, you know, getting that cut was incredible. So it's funny, the album came out 2 years from the, you know, a little over 2 years from the time that we did the writing session in Canada. I was back at that same writing camp a week of the release. So I was
My
able to
goodness.
celebrate with Justin, who and Jeremy, who were there at that point for the release. And I was so excited because, you know, it was an instant success. People loved the record. I was able to see her live. She did a videotaping for her live performance at the Irving Plaza. I got to see her live there, meet her briefly. She's a lovely, lovely young lady. And she just always had it. It was just an incredible experience, you know, just to hear someone so young have such, you know, just an incredible control of her vocal and to be so mature in her delivery. Like, you know, working with Betty Wright was probably also an added bonus.
Well, and what I was going to say is now everyone, if you might not know, Joss Stone was born in 1987, okay? Which meant that in like 2002, she's 15 years old. 2000, this is still a child, not even an independent woman at that point, but she had the ability to have so much soul in her voice. Like when people are like, oh, I'm an old soul, it's like, no, Joss Stone is the epitome of that. Because the other thing is to have, you can have one tone be that way, but she had the lung capacity to really give these soul things. And Betty Wright, who's an icon, having that as kind of your, what I would say is like your mentor, somebody that you could look up to. Here you have Joss Stone delivering these songs in such an impactful way, and critics loved it right away. And that was the question: what is going to happen? The debut album with these covers Many people said, wait, why go that way? I think it was the smartest thing for them to do.
Yeah, Steve Greenberg was a marketing genius. He also released the song "Who Let the Dogs Out." So his power was marketing. He knew how to market. He understood that. He understood exactly the lane that he wanted to take her. He wanted her to be appealed to an older audience. He knew as a teenager she would have a younger audience anyway. So he really was going after the legacy aspect. So adding Betty Wright to the mixture, which was so pivotal because she really trained Joss as far as her performance and just delivery, and especially she vocal produced pretty much all the songs on that album. And Betty was a super legend, OG legend. So I was just honored that she worked on our song. She sang backgrounds on it. It was a whole
Oh,
nother
yes.
song. It did not mirror the demo. The demo was quite different from what Joss had done. Joss elevated it. And to this day is one of my finer releases that I'm most proud of is Don't Know How. Even though it wasn't a single, it was an album cut that really was pivotal for me because it opened the international door, namely London, to up to me. So I'm really grateful for that release.
See, and everyone, as we close up on this track, this is what's important to note. Not every song is created on January 1st, recorded, March 1st, released,
True.
August 1st. Some of these take a long journey. In addition, I also think that when the second album came out, I think it was the perfect time for her to come out. I don't know if this album would have been the same type of album had it been her first album with no soul sessions. I think she needed to kind of explore all those different textures and tones. British UK singer Craig David released his debut album, Born to Do It, featuring the hits Fill Me In, 7 Days, and Walking Away. Craig David's production brought a new genre to many people. The critics were complimenting his work in the two-step garage sound. As a matter of fact, one of Britney Spears' frequent collaborators, music producer and songwriter Josh Schwartz, said that the Princess of Pop wanted to make a Craig David sounding song. And the result was the song That's Where You Take Me from Britney Spears' third studio album, simply titled Britney. Now, Craig David's commercial success in the UK included 2 number 1 songs, 16 top 10 songs, and on the album front, 2 UK number 1 albums and 6 top 10 albums. Throughout his over 25 years in the music industry, he has been nominated for Brit Awards and Grammy Awards. It's a little bit about Craig David. Now, back to our chat with Curtis Richa and his work with Craig David. All right, now we're going to go and fast forward from 2004 to go to 2007. British singer Craig David released his fourth studio album, Trust Me. The album peaked at number 8 in the UK on the R&B album charts and is gold certified in the UK. Now, the fourth single from the album was Officially Yours, which was released in the summer of 2008. And that happened to have been co-created by Curtis. So let's go back. How did this song come to be, and how much did you know about Craig David prior to that?
Oh, I loved Craig David from the Born to Do This. I loved him from the debut album. I love rhythmic singers. You have Beyonce and Craig David. And I'll have this little funny joke about Craig David. I feel like Craig David was the predecessor to Drake, if you think about it. Because he had this rap singing style, melodic, very cool, very cutting edge. It came from like two-step garage era, which I loved. I was really immersed in the international market even then. The funny thing is, Officially Yours was not created when we it was also written at a writing camp. So we wrote this song, and it was written in Sweden in 2006 initially at a writing camp for Phrase Differently, who's run by Hiten Bahara. And Hiten, myself, Paolo Mendoza, and Ian James is incredible. Both of them are just, Paolo's a legendary Swedish composer, artist, producer. And Ian is just also, in my mind, legendary as well. In the UK, he's written for a Little Mix and so many big artists. He's written hits, So, but at that time, this was before all of that. And we were in Varberg, Sweden at a Phrase Differently writing camp. Which was also facilitated by Fredrik Olsen at the time. So we wrote this song, Officially Yours. What happened was we were sitting there, Paolo's playing the guitar, And I love writing to guitars because the melodies come so quickly. So we were milling about, me and Ian were milling about the melodies and then hitting chimed in with the melody. And then we started shaping the lyric, but we just started with the verse, which is really interesting, like structuring. And then I had to go to the restroom really bad. I remember this like yesterday. And so I went to the restroom. And while I'm in the restroom, the whole chorus comes to me, like literally.
Oh
I'm
my goodness.
officially going off the record to say I'm in love with you. I'm officially everything you hoped that I would be. You promised to tell the truth. So that whole part came to me. That part. Now the ending of it, we worked out when I say, hey guys, I got the chorus. I got the chorus. So I'm singing it. They're like, yes, that's it, that's it. So then we finished, all of us finished the record. It didn't take long. It took us like maybe an hour and maybe a little hour and 15 minutes to finish the whole song. It was pretty quick. Maybe less than that, maybe an hour. And we loved the song. So we demoed it at the camp. And I remember thinking, wow, this is such a special record. I love this song. I'm like, and mind you, I did other records during that week, but that record stuck out. So Hidden had the brilliant idea when he got back to London to pitch it to Craig David. I think, oh my gosh, Craig would be great. You know, I didn't think that he would be, you know, the artist for it. So I was thinking, okay, great. So he pitched it, he placed it. And this wonderful producer named Martin Terrifay, who has a wonderful studio called Kensal Town, he has one in London and also New York, produced it with Craig. My friend Glenn Scott played on it, who's an incredible artist. Craig also did some additional, so he did some post work on it. He rewrote parts of the song. So he's a composer on the record as well. And when it came out, I was just so, I loved it. It was just everything that I hoped it would be. It feels like a classic record, but it also felt new and it felt very much Craig David. Like he really put stylistic stamp on the record, which he always does. He's a great composer himself, so I knew he would add that element. Martin and, you know, did an incredible job in the production. Glenn as well, helping out as well. So we were very, very, very proud of that record. And still am, still very proud. It wasn't the biggest Craig David hit record, but it's one of the records that I think he can do at any age, any point of his career. He can, you know, you can do acoustic, you can do it with a big live band, you can do it with the track, you can do it anytime. So it's a great record.
Well, and I think this is another story for the listeners to know is there are songs that are created that are not created with a specific artist in mind, that you just go, okay, I'm vibing with this person, let's just go with it. And oftentimes, and so many people I've talked to, is usually it ends up at somebody who wasn't even in your mind in the first place. Because there are, of course, millions of people you think about, you're just like, oh, this is great. And then somebody throws that idea out there, you're like, I get it, I can see it. And what Craig David has been able to do is make a career of smart decisions. On every album, it is automatically, you can tell it is a Craig David album.
And I want to give a big shout out to one more person. Her name was Kinde. She worked at a Warner Publishing at the time, and she also helped champion that record as well. So it took a few different launching agents to get that record to Craig. You know, then of course, you know, Kinde, you know, co-signing, and then the main A&R, and then the record getting placed. So I'm very much thrilled about that record because I think it happened at a very pivotal time for me. And it's I call it, it's for me, it's a classic record.
There you go. Everyone, don't forget, I send out links with ways to purchase these songs, to stream these songs, so you can kind of take a listen and hear the hard work from all of these artists. Don't forget to join me on Instagram, the.original.dal. On there, you'll see different videos about me talking about such iconic achievements by so many people that we all love. The.original.dal. And if you'd like to join my community on Patreon to keep this show going, you can do so. Just go the old school way. Go to the website, theoriginaldal.com. There, you'll find all sorts of ways to support the show. Now, up next, I kind of wanted to talk about something. Curtis, you've worked with a ton of people. You have a ton of music out there, and there's a ton of music that keeps coming out over and over the years.
Yes.
And what I love doing here is clearing up all of these things, honoring everyone in the appropriate fashion. One of the things that was interesting is you have had so many songs, and so many people have been reaching out to you, to me. Oh my God, Curtis did these million songs for Britney Spears and Janet Jackson or Madonna, all these people and everything. And I think there's love of music in that. And I also think there's people that are just like, I want to be the first to say this sort of thing. And so I kind of wanted to go through a couple of these songs to clear up. Because the other thing too is you, as somebody who knows, you love the true evolution of artists, the true evolution of what was being pitched, what was on your mind. So let's go to this. You and I share a huge love of Janet Jackson. In doing so, we both share a love of Britney Spears and how Janet really, there's so many people that influence Britney, and Britney's acknowledged it. But Britney is a whole new generation of people's it girl that they can grow up with, and I think it's awesome. So let's talk about this. Had songs that you've thought of maybe in mind for Britney, not in mind for Britney. So let's clear this up. Let's talk about a couple of these. And on the second part of that, when you're creating something specifically for an artist like Britney Spears, what does the creative in you think about knowing her catalog is vast? So the first part is let's clear up these songs that people are saying, these are all Britney songs, and then let's talk about what you do in your mind to create a song for Britney Spears.
Okay, great. We can, which song would you like to start with?
Let's go alphabetically. Hands up.
Okay, so Hands Up was done. My friend Lucas Nathanson, and his partner John. No, it wasn't John. I think it was Scott. Sorry, Lucas Nathanson and Scott. Lucas is from Sweden, and I work with him in Sweden, but he was in New York at the time, and he said, I'd love to do a session. So me, Charlie Vox, aka Charlene Gilliam, and Angélique Sinulou, my another great composer, both incredible singer-songwriters. We went to the studio, we did this record, and I think at the time we were thinking Rihanna, actually, because this was like right before. This is right after Good Girl Gone Bad, and we wanted to do something like that was up tempo with electro, but still urban, still what have you. So that was the original intention of it. There was a mention of pitching it to Britney at one point, but it's never transpired. And we love we just had a we were at a party that day. We just really just wrote what we felt in a moment. It was just real high energy. You know, hands up, you're like you're at a party, you're having a good time, you know, you're connecting with people. So it was more or less the energy that we felt in the moment. We just created a song that spoke to that. So,
So in this situation, if somebody says, oh, it was definitely pitched to Britney, it was created for Britney.
it wasn't created specifically for Britney, but we there was an intention to pitch for Britney. I will pick a song now, thinking back, and it would have been fantastic for Britney. At the time, because you know, Britney's really good with rhythm. Of course, she's an incredible dancer, performer. So yeah, I can see how people would attach that to Britney because it does have that quirky pop feel to it that she masters so well. But the initial thought wasn't Britney for that particular song.
And the other thing to keep in mind is for everyone, like from 2005, six, well, 2006 afterwards, there was a lot of interchanging where people are like, okay, if Britney won't cut it, maybe we pitch it to Rihanna. If Rihanna doesn't cut it, we'll pitch. Because these were two of, to your point, they were doing rhythmic pop. They were able to create these club anthems, these high energy. Those were the artists. And the crazy thing is, over the years and years of doing this, so many people are like, oh, it definitely was for this person or not for that person. I go, not, first of all, not every song Britney ever cut was written specifically for Britney. That's not a normal thing. There's so
Look
many
at
times where it
baby.
comes to you.
Like Baby Hit Me One More Time was a TLC song initially. It wasn't even Britney, so that's what happens.
And so to me, this is the part that I love about clearing this up, but also to hear, here you are, somebody who ultimate, you have a cut with Rihanna on one of her albums, you know, and it's kind of cool to go, okay, what other type of thing? And those two songs couldn't be more opposite. Do you know what I mean? Sonically. And that's the genius in what you do. It's not cut and paste every single thing.
Oh no. No, not at all. You have to be flexible, and you know, you write for what you feel where the artist is, you know, and you know what you think might appeal to, you know, where they want to go. So that's really important. It's almost like to be a bit intuitive as much as you can be, because you don't know, no one gives you the direction. You just have to, you have to find a way to, you know, to create something, may connect or not, you know, it just depends.
So let's go to metaphor. Now, this is another one. People are like, oh, it was written for Britney. It was considered for Britney.
No,
Britney.
no. That was written for Gwen Stefani. And it's funny because the version that's on YouTube is not the key of the demo, which I'm happy about because I still want to pitch this song. Me and Charlene, aka Charlie Vox, Gilliam, Charlene Gilliam, Charlie Vox, producer named Fanatic, aka Andre O'Heard, and Sherrod Barnes, we wrote and produced that song. Really, it was written for Gwen Stefani. We were inspired by Blondie. But we want to modernize it. So we were thinking of Gwen because, you know, Gwen has that very edgy ska, you know, pop, quirky, but urban pop feel. And we had a little rock in it too. So there was a little element of rock. She does all that so well. So we figured, okay, let's do something called Metaphor. And Metaphor is it's a funny story. It's about it's about a stalker. Someone that follows you, and you're like, you're onto them following you. You're like trying to give them the hint, like, I'm not interested in you. Like, you know, stop stalking me. Like, it's quite ominous, but funny at the same time. It's kind of sarcastic. At the end, we were inspired by Prince. So we did this kind of sing rap thing at the end, which was very Prince-esque. But yeah, that's Metaphor. It was Gwen Stefani, not Britney.
See, there you go. And this is what I love because what's cool is to hear these stories about how these songs are created. And we're talking about these because most of them have been leaked out there and everything. And everyone, it's, not every song, if somebody says, oh, it was, written for Britney, was ever considered by Britney, recorded by Britney. I think there's a lot of different stages that it goes through. And to your point, when you look at what you've been able to create, if you're thinking about one artist, you're like, okay, let me try this out. What was great is with Gwen Stefani. Even with, the second album, The Sweet Escape, actually, even with the first album, Love Angel Music Baby, she was working with so many iconic artists themselves, dude. Jammin' Lewis, Harajuku Girls. She was working with all these different people. And what I loved is that, to your point, I think Gwen Stefani, those two albums specifically, she doesn't get enough credit for bending the genres to be able to do Prince kind of songs. Not saying that they were Prince songs, but there was heavy instruments in these. There was heavy rhythm in these. There was soul in these. And there was that quirkiness and kind of little off center that you don't expect. So knowing this now, it's like, this makes sense. This makes sense. It would be, for me, I was thinking Gwen Stefani or like early Lady Gaga, where Lady Gaga had that
Yeah, I
Blondie
mean,
kind
Lady
of.
Gaga would have been great. She writes songs. I mean, they both write, but I felt it was definitely for Gwen. And I've always loved Gwen because I felt like she was kind of like, for that era, she was like the Madonna for that era, because she had no doubt, but she can float through these. Madonna was the genius of Madonna. What people don't understand is that Madonna started in dance music, and she has touched every genre of music. She's done every style of music, and it gets lost because, you know, she does it so effortlessly that you don't remember how musical she is. Like, she's been able to tap into every. Like, my favorite album, I mean, I love Bedtime Stories. I love the song Bedtime Stories, but that Ray of Light album is just genius. Like, it's but so when I think of Gwen, all the No Doubt catalog and just everything that she's done, like even down to Holla Back, how she twists the genre so well. I think it would have been an honor to work. I still would love to work with her, and we're still pitching that song, so I want to try to see if I can pull that song off the internet, but we'll see.
So there you go. People are going to be like, wait, it's off the internet now. And the other thing too is I think people, we've talked over the years is when songs get leaked, yes, it's great if people are loving the songs, but also it does hurt the chances of these getting picked up by somebody else that, not every song, but a lot of these things. So here's a question for you then. When you're pitching to artists, like let's say Gwen Stefani, even Madonna, Janet Jackson, Britney Spears, would you go, knowing that these are like legacy artists that have huge albums, do you think you would go back and look through their albums, listen to their albums? Or do you think you would go, in spite of their albums, this I think works now? You as the creative, you as a creator, how do you handle that?
Well, I'm a music historian, so I've already listened to all their material already. Like I know I've listened to Madonna since 1981 too, so I know a lot of her catalog. Janet, 82 since the first album. Gwen since the I mean I used to work in record stores. I have a storage unit with so many tapes, CDs and vinyl. I've listened to it. So I do think you have to understand the nucleus and of who the artist is as far as their essence. But when you're creating, you have to create something new. You have to give them, it has to be new information that they haven't done. It can have the element of their essence, but you have to present a story, a theme, a concept that hasn't been done, which is very difficult with legacy artists because they've done so much. You know, they've covered so many aspects of things. You know, when you think about Janet and Madonna specifically, they've done social, you know, justice songs. They've done love songs, done songs about sexuality. They've done songs about everything, spirituality. They've done everything. So then you're like, okay, what do we want to say? And also too, you have to leave room for them to say, you know what, this is great. I would like to, you know, tailor make this for me or shape this for me. So it could be a collaborative experience as well. So you don't want to be so closed that their information is not in the song because you know they are songwriters as well. So and producers. So it's just, it's a lot of, it's a lot, it's a process. It is. I think for me, it's a bit of intuition and it's a bit of just understanding the underbelly of who the artist is in general. Like, who are they? Like, what do you feel they're going to say? You know, and you just take that risk. And sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't. It just depends on where the artist is at that time.
There you go. Now, what I want to do is transition right into this. We just had Junior Sanchez on. We've had you on. We've had Maya on before. You all, and this is, I'll say, just years in the making of this song to be released. So hype, which is phenomenal. Everyone, it is out right now.
Out right now.
So, Curtis, let's talk about your part in this. How did this song come to be, the kind of evolution of this? Give us the history. Let's unpackage this.
I love this story. So this song was actually written 4 years ago. Initially, it was at the beginning of the pandemic. And I work with these incredibly and just phenomenal creatives. One's based in Holland, her name is Ruby Prophet, singer, songwriter, producer. Another is named Shuko, who is a producer, songwriter, engineer, mastering engineer, everything. Just musical virtuoso, just does everything. And also a big aficionado when it comes to hip hop. He knows it. Actually, he was working with Timbaland at the time. He's also produced on with Kanye West. So we worked on this song called So Hype. And it was originally this more slow, like mid-tempo, winding, urban kind of house. Not no, it wasn't really dance. It was kind of like hip hop and R&B-ish. But it was really cool. And we wrote it, we arranged it, and I had the demo. Now, mind you, a year before I had met Junior Sanchez, who I was always a big fan of, and we became so cool. And I've been dying to work with him. So we were working on some things anyway together the year before. And we met in Holland. No, we actually met, I think, in 2018, but we worked together in 2019. And I was talking to Junior. I said, hey, I have this song I'm really excited about. It's just a rough demo. I want you to just listen to it. Because at that point, I was just sharing songs with him, just things that I was doing. He heard the song. It was like, send me the vocals. I'm like, okay. So I sent the vocals. And then he transformed that song, which was way slower, into what we now hear is So Hype. Now, the thing about So Hype is there's the chord elements that were part of the original that Junior used, where he added so many other musical elements and then reproducing and added the track, even the beat, everything was just, it's like a completely new track. So that was great because him and Shuko got to produce together, which is fantastic. And then the demo just sat. And I was kind of like, after a while, I was like, what are we gonna do with the song? Because what created was just phenomenal. And Ruby was doing a vocal at the time. And we all felt that we wanted a good feature for the record. We just didn't know who, So subsequently last year, Junior was in the studio with Maya and they were working on, music together because they had worked together previously on a lot of material, and she was working on the project and he played her the record and she just absolutely just connected with the record instantly from hearing the demo that was done. He then, reached out, said, "What do you think about Maya?" I said, "Absolutely." She then also went in to cut the record and she changed, some parts of the song, so she's also a composer on it. So it ended up, that is what you hear as the final version of So Hype. And what I love about it is that once again, the song had a journey. It was like a 4-year-old song. It was in a much slower tempo. It was a different style. And Junior transformed it. And then, it's what it is today. So you'll hear Ruby in the background. Ruby is singing in the backgrounds with Maya. And we all got to be a part of this whole final product, which I love. And Junior is so gracious and so incredible as a human because he really celebrated each of our contributions. And, we'll be doing some, conversations about that coming up. But, and working with Maya was not on my bucket list, but I'm happy on my resume, and but not even resume, just the opportunity to work with her, because I think she's just an artist that inspired me because she did things by her own rules. And what people don't know about Maya, she's an incredible songwriter and producer and engineer herself. So the fact that she allowed us to be a part of her creative sphere was great, because a lot of times with artists, who write, it's hard for them to connect to material that they didn't necessarily initiate. So the fact that she was a part of this, and she is a part of it, is the cherry on the top. But Junior is a phenomenal talent. I mean, beyond the fact that he's a legendary DJ, he's just an incredible producer. I mean, honestly, of every genre. And that's what I want people to know. Shuko, phenomenal, based in Germany. Please look him up on IG, Shuko. He is just insanely gifted. Ruby Prophet, insanely. That girl, that, listen, she is got next. She's going to be the next big thing as far as her being a composer, an arranger, and she's an artist too. And she's just incredible with rhythm and arrangement. And it's just a joy to work with her, and joy to work with all of these incredible, gifted people.
All right, everyone. I just want to thank Curtis Richard. Curtis, how can people find you easiest on social
Okay.
media?
Fine. You can find me at Curtis Richa on IG, Instagram.
If you have any questions about his other work, or like we've learned so much about the creative process, that's what's important and that's what's
Yes,
amazing.
we will answer those questions. And also, you can find So Hype in all my whole discography on my Apple Songbook, which is Curtis Richardson on Apple Music, and you can get a taste of all the music I've ever done. And James, thank you so much for this time.
Thank you for being here.
Original Doll is the best.
Not a paid endorsement, but I love it. All
And
right, thank you so much. here's this week's bonus track. We talk about Lucky Tonight. And if you want an extended version of this, you can check out the Patreon, theoriginaldoll.com. Click on Patreon for platinum certified and above. You'll be getting this within the next week with some more information and some more bonus content. Thank you so much for listening and joining me. Truly appreciate the support. Back to the show. All right, the next song we've gotten questions about is Lucky Tonight. We're going in alphabetical
Oh my
order.
gosh, one of my favorite songs, still one of my favorite songs. Okay, so where was I at that time? Was I in Sweden at that time? I think I might have been in Sweden.
I
No,
always assume you're somewhere in Europe for these songs.
Lucky Tonight was written by Frida Melande and Christian Robb, along with myself and Lucas Nathanson. So Lucas and Christian worked on the track, and me and Frida worked on the song. So we pretty much pulled the song. It was done via the internet because we weren't all together at the time. And I think we wrote this for Britney. This was clearly a brand new pitch. It was before I even touched the song, the track. It was like Britney Spears. That's where we're going. So in my mind, I'm thinking Britney is kind of like this mysterious. She has a mystery to her. She's approachable, but she's also mysterious. And I wanted her to do something that was kind of sensual, but not overt. You know what I mean? So I remember talking to a friend of mine, a female friend of mine. And she was just like, "Gosh, this guy thinks he's going to get lucky tonight. He's not going to get lucky tonight because I'm not doing anything." So I had this stuck in my brain. So when we were doing a session, I was like, "Okay, we're going to write a song called Lucky Tonight, and it's going to be about this, 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 and this." And essentially, the song's about, yeah, we're flirting with each other, but I haven't really given you the green light, like, quite yet. So we're lucky tonight. You might get lucky tonight. So that's the thing. So that's really essentially it.
So this song, we can confirm, this
Brittany.
was written for Brit,
It
like
was
this.
for Brittany. It was for Brittany, Brittany, and it still is for Brittany as far as I'm concerned.
And then so, but there was no, Brittany never went in the studio, recorded this. Brittany, it was never in consideration for the album,
No.
anything like
I
that.
think that was the Circus album when we did it. That Circus album came out right around that time, I think. And of course, that was Circus is one of my favorite songs written by Claude Kelly, which is
So good.
one of Britney's best songs ever. So I wasn't really mad because the quality that she, I was like, okay, well, it could have been on the album, but the singles that she had were just incredible. Like Work Bitch, which came after that, which is incredible too. Love that. Will I Am, great.
And thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram, that.original.dal. I'll see you on the flip side. The original doll.